Welcome to the Every Day is Saturday podcast, the number one motivation show on the planet.
No more Mondays for you. It's time to make every day Saturday. Boom!
This is the podcast where we help you to accept who you are, not where you are.
On the roller coaster of life, you know we only sit in the front seat, champion. So make sure you are fastened in tight. Let's go!
Tired of feeling run down all the time during the week? We can help you make every day feel like it's a Saturday.
Let's go pack your bags. It's time to leave Averageville.
Introducing the man who thinks abnormal stands for above normal.
When you're on fire, people will travel from miles around to watch you burn, baby. We are fired up.
The host of the Every Day is Saturday show, Sam Crowley.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Sam Crowley, host of the Every Day Saturday podcast. It's interview day. Every now and again, find an amazing guest and we bring them to you. No day is no different. Let's just dive right into it. Joseph McClendon III, are you with me?
I am here in sunny Southern California. Thank you for having me on your show.
Hey, for once, man, I'm in Ohio and it is sunny because it's beautiful July. Have you ever been to Ohio, by the way?
I have. As a matter of fact, my father lived in Dayton for about 35 years, so I visited him quite a bit.
Wow. No kidding. Right up the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, so I met Joseph. Some of you may be wondering, okay, who's Joseph McClendon III? You guys are diving into this thing way too quick for me. I was speaking in Orlando last month, and I was in the green room, and Joseph came in, and we started talking, hit it off amazingly well, and just, you know, just a couple of guys talking in the green room before we're going out to speak. And Joseph's been doing this forever, and we have an affinity for Prince, right, Joe? Purple Rain?
Yes, very much so. That was like a death in the family, wasn't it?
Man, I'll tell you what. That's one of those things you can remember where you were when you heard the news.
Exactly, exactly. You know?
So we were talking about Prince's greatest hits and Purple Rain, and Joseph has been in the personal development and the speaking circuit forever. He's Tony Robbins' right-hand man, and so I said, wow, what a great guest he'd be to have in the Every Day Saturday podcast, downloaded in over 100 countries every single day. And Joseph, it's great to have you, man. I'm just going to start picking your brain. Are you ready?
Go for it. It's wide open for you. And by the way, thank you for allowing me to be on this call. And for everybody that's listening, he's selling himself short. He's an unbelievable powerhouse himself. The reason why we hit it off is because I recognize the skill and the talent in this man as well. Something that you guys probably already know.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. My wife appreciates that too, man. Very much so. Hey, well, first of all, I'm a horrible interviewer because I'm so self-absorbed. I do this show by myself so much. I forget to ask people. You've got a really fascinating background. Can you give us kind of the Reader's Digest version, where you're from, how'd you grow up, how'd you grow into who you are, and kind of give us a background of Joseph McClendon III?
Yeah, sure. I wasn't always this awesome.
Who was, right? No,
I jokingly say that I am who I am and have the lifestyle that I have right now and the ability to impact as many people's lives as I do because of my great mentors through time. I've had some, and still do, and you're soon to be one of them as well, Sam. So I started off I had a great upbringing, great parents, and you know, my dad was in the Air Force, and I'm kind of an Air Force brat and everything. However, when I was 17 years old, my life changed a couple different ways. Then the most radical was I became homeless. Actually, I became homeless by the time I was 18. But the reason I became homeless was not because I had a bad upbringing or anything like that, or I had, you know, lived in a bad place. It was because when I was 17 years old, three grown men tried to take my life. Because of the color of my skin. They left me for dead, and very long story short, it impacted me in a way that caused me to feel worthless and caused me to feel that if somebody could do something like this to me, then it was my fault. You know, all the things that I now know go along with traumatic experiences. And as a result, I wound up living in a cardboard box behind a drive-in theater in Lancaster, California. And what changed my life was somebody gave me a book, and it was somebody that I didn't know. It was just a kind person who saw my situation, saw my need, and gave me a book. And the book was called Think and Grow Rich. And I read the book, changed my life almost overnight. And long story short, again, you asked for the abbreviated version, when I went back to him to ask him how I repay him for what he's done for me, what he said to me was, he goes, well, now it's on you now. Mm. You got to pay it forward, and you got to do this for as many people as you possibly can for the rest of your life. And of course, I was 18 years old when I heard that, so I didn't really know what that meant. And I was the king of self-absorption and all that stuff. So it maybe took a couple years before it really sunk in, but it became, through my life, it became, that is my passion. That's what I love to do, is to really give the information, but more specifically, assist people in changing their lives. And as a result, having that passion to do that, I became a psychologist. I'm a neuropsychologist, and I opened a practice in Los Angeles, and that is kind of the hotbed for nut jobs. but it was trial by fire, meaning that I had to get really, really good, really, really quick. And it was right at around that time I also met my business partner, Tony Robbins, and I learned a lot of the skills that he teaches, and we kind of partnered up and became buddies. And now we've been working together for getting close to 3 decades now.
Wow. That's amazing. Has Tony, God, he's been around forever, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forever. And you know, you hold a doctorate in neuropsychology, which goes to show, like, literally, I thought we had less in common before I got on this call. I have about 20 college credits. Most are gym and health class. And you've got a doctorate in neuropsychology. Good Lord. Why do you think, I'm kind of curious if, you know, do you think, and I've got my own opinion on this, but I just want to hear from you. Do you think that somebody who comes from just a bad background, and I guess everybody's definition of bad would be different, but they just don't know what they don't know. Do you think somebody who doesn't have an entrepreneurial DNA anywhere in their lineage, who doesn't know anything about how to be successful, doesn't know anything about personal development, can they really turn themselves into who you are, somebody like yourself today? And how does that transformation happen? Or there's some people who subscribe to, you know, generational poverty. Look, my parents were poor, my grandparents were poor, their grandparents were poor. I'm just going to be poor. I don't know what I don't know. How do people get out of that funk, man?
Well, several answers to two questions. First, my belief with regard to whether that person that is at the bottom end of the spectrum with regard to ownership of entrepreneurship and ownership of you know, the skill to be able to get themselves out of it and so on and so forth, and born with a plastic spoon in their mouth versus the silver spoon and all that stuff. History in every country around the world throughout history is replete with examples of people that started with nothing, and as a matter of fact, tragedy came from tragedy and rose to be, in terms of success by most people's standard, way overboard. And oftentimes it is that disparity that causes them to try harder and to dig deeper. But history is also replete with examples of people that were born with a silver spoon in their mouth, have everything, got everything going for them, everything, and they sabotage and throw it in the toilet and wind up in the gutter.
Yeah.
So it is not the circumstances or the situations, it's the person. And I shouldn't say that it's not the circumstances or situations, because I could have very well been there had not Providence stepped in and that guy gave me the book. Because I certainly wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, but I certainly came into this world at a higher level than somebody that you said had generational poverty and all those things. But situations changed my life. Events changed my life. And some say, you've heard this before, that when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I agree that when somebody has a need and really has a desire for something to happen, at the risk of sounding too cosmic, Providence will step in. As a matter of fact, you can cause it to step in. But you've got to do something about it when it does. And then secondly, your second question with regard to the success DNA or entrepreneurship DNA, what I believe is it's in all of us, every single one of us. And how one comes from where they are to where they want to be is always, always, first, they got to have the desire to do that. And then secondly, They've got to be coachable, even though they don't know they are. They've got to be able to take instruction and get from mentors and so on and so forth. And then it's always got to, it's always, 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 Sam, a change in how they think. It's a change in their psychology that shifts people from being on the bottom to being on the top, or at least on the journey.
What caused you, I mean, somebody gives you a book, you know, very similar to Bob Proctor's story too. Somebody gave him Think and Grow Rich, and look, yeah, he's been teaching for 50 years just out of that same book. And when somebody gives Joseph McClendon III, Living in a Cardboard Box, that book, what makes you not say, hey, dude, give me $100, man. Give me this book. What the hell do I want with a book? I can, you know, give me a pizza and $100.
Oddly enough, I did do that.
Oh.
The story is a longer story. I had crashed my motorcycle the night before, slept in the desert when it rained on me, and I got up the next – and by the way, when I was in the really long story, really, really short, Sam, when I was in that position at the – literally my face in the mud, cut up, beat up and everything, I said to myself in that moment, this is where it changes. I didn't know how it was going to change when it was. I had the desire at that point. I had not and being in that place, to be honest with you, the worst part of the whole thing that shifted me was I was freezing cold, and I hate the cold. That was just enough pain for me. And by the way, it doesn't always have to be pain that shifts people.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's what I teach. That's what I preach. That's what I show people, the technologies, the systems to be able to shift themselves at will. But what shifted for me was I literally stood in the mud stomping around. It's going to change. I got happy. I got excited. And the next day, as I said, Providence showed up. But it showed up because I pushed my motorcycle to this welding shop. It was early in the morning. I knocked on the door. An old man came to the door, and he said he would fix the bike. And he said, push it into the garage. I pushed it in the garage. He closed the garage, and that's when he gave me the book. He said, you got to read this book before I do anything on your bike. And the garage is locked. And I was so pissed off. It was like I thought this guy's taking advantage of me and everything. But he kind of boxed me. And I said, just fix my bike or give it back to me. And he said, nope, you're going to read the book. You need it right now. And I read that book in a day. I don't think I ever read a book in a day.
Wow.
But first I sat down, and while I was angry, going, now it's worse. I'm in this situation with this crazy old guy, you know, and, you know, he's giving me this book and blah, blah, blah. And by the way, the book didn't have a cover on it. It was so old, it didn't have a cover on it. So I didn't even know the title of the book. So I started reading it, and what caught me right away was there was a process. And it brings with it the promise of if you do A, B, C, then you're going to get C, D, E, you know. And I was absorbed in that, and that's what changed.
Wow. That's pretty wild, man. I mean, that really is, you know, that's just such a crazy story. I mean, it's so awesome to hear that, but there's such a fine line between somebody say, yes, I'm in enough pain right now. I'm going to make the leap, and then, or nah, I'm good. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing.
I agree with you.
How did you meet Tony? I'm kind of curious about that. I know we have a mutual friend of Mary Glorfield as well, and she's worked for Tony for a long time as well. But how did you said you teamed up with him, I think, in 1986. How did that meeting take place?
Well, I had ironically – gosh, you're making me bare my soul.
Oh, come on. That's what we do here.
I know. I'm joking. Ironically, later on in my life, because that happened when I was 18 that I was telling you about before.
Yeah.
But later on in my life, I started to do very, very well because I brought those philosophies along, as well as – and I didn't know at the time. I had no idea at the time that I was actually doing what I teach now. So things started to change for me. And I'm at heart, I'm a musician. I'm an artist. And this was back in the 80s. You remember the 80s?
Oh, God, yes. Stonewashed Jeans.
My passion was playing music. I'm a singer-songwriter. And I had set one of my goals to get a recording contract. But I also had some internal programming from my childhood that came from a well-meaning father who grew up in the Depression. And he said, listen, you know, you got to stay in school and you got to keep a good job or you'll be digging ditches. That was his saying. Mm. And so as a result, even after I got out of college, I still continued to take courses. And I was a dental technician. I had that job for almost 15 years. I hated it, but I wanted to be an artist. I couldn't quit my job. So I had I saw an infomercial on television one night, and this was 1983. In 83, the infomercial was by a guy named Robert Allen, yep. And it was how to buy houses for no money down. Mm-hmm. And he had this conversation with us, and he said, listen, I'm going to show you how to buy X amount of houses, and then you can live off of the residual income from the properties. And I thought, that's it. That's for me, because then I can do that. And then I got that money and I can leave my job and then go, play music or get a recording contract.
Yeah, yeah.
So I applied again, what I teach now. And in a year and a half's time, and his plan was one house a year for 10 years. Two houses a year for 10 years. My plan was 10 houses a year for 2 years. And so in a year and a half's time, I bought 26 homes. And I had income, but I still couldn't quit my job. I had this fear of quitting my job, and I didn't know what was going on. So I was at the bottom of my rope again, and a friend of mine told me, well, listen, you need to go see this guy, Tony Robbins. And I go, I don't want to go to another seminar because I thought I was, upside down. I thought that things were bad. I'd owned all these houses and everything, but I wasn't happy. And I said, I don't want to go to another seminar because I went to a seminar last time, and now I still got my job and I got 26 houses.
Yeah.
And so long story short, I went to the event. It was in Los Angeles. And when I got there, I was not in a great state. I was not happy, and I was kind of wondering why I was there in the first place. And one of his staff members, a big guy, came up and started talking to me. And he said, you ought to hang around, because I was getting ready to leave. And he said, because this Tony guy is awesome, and he can help you with stuff. And he said, we're going to do a firewalk. And I thought, again, I didn't even know it was going to be a firewalk. And I said, excuse me? And he goes, oh, you don't have to do it, but, if you want to, you can. It's just blah, blah, blah. So we talked, and I decided to stay. And that same guy, he said, I got to go. And he walked backstage and then walked right up on stage, and it was him. It was Tony.
That's funny.
Yeah. And we became friends, and been friends ever since, and business partners ever since.
Jeez, what a great story, man. It's funny how people just come into your life like that, though. When you mentioned, I applied what I teach, when you saw that Robert Allen infomercial, and you said, I just applied what I now teach. What was it? I mean, why were you able to buy 20-some houses in a couple of years versus, again, somebody else who may not have even bought one house? What did you mean by I apply what I teach?
Well, I'll put it this way. Procrastination, hesitation, fear of failure, fear of success, and all of those negative behaviors that go along with that, those are the thieves of our dreams. And so when I say I applied what was there, I applied very, very simply. There's a couple of systems that he had with regard to influencing the universe around you. But more specifically, I know now it was influencing myself. And now I've distilled it down to some very specifics. So no matter what you're doing, no matter how successful you are right now, if you want to be more, there's generally just a couple of things that get in your way. And one of them is you. It's an internal dialogue that's going on inside of our heads. And all of us want to have more confidence and certainty and less procrastination and all those things. So what I teach is but I always say this, and it's if I'm going to, because what my title is I'm an ultimate performance specialist. And that all that really means is through seminars and workshops and live interventions and one-on-one coaching, kind of a high-end life coach, if you will. I help people get the best out of themselves. And I've got, at the risk of sounding arrogant, Academy Award winning clients. I've got Grammy winning clients, movie stars, actors, actresses, and sports figures, and even politicians, and even some royalty. But everybody wants the same thing. They want to change how they think/feel so that they do something different. Whether it's a bad habit that they have that they want to get rid of, whether it's a fear or a phobia, something they want to get rid of, or whether it's the next level that they want to get to in their climb to success. There's only one thing, or I shouldn't say there's one thing, there's two things that stand in the way. One of them is ourselves and how we feel about ourselves, how we think, our own psychology. And then the second one is our environment that's around us. Remember before I said the environment that I was in was painful for me. And some people are so complacent that they feel like, you know, well, why should I do this? Why should I move? And this is not unconscious, always a conscious thought. It's something unconscious that keeps us in place. It's, you know, I don't want to, I'm afraid of screwing up what I do have. And it's why people stay in relationships that they don't want to be in, because the hell that they have is better than the hell that they don't know. And so that environment does not have to be painful to get people to shift. It can be pleasure. And so those two things are what I teach people, how to change your environment, internal and externally, and then change your own belief systems, your own psychology, if you will, so that you do more and then have more and feel better.
I love it, man. I love it. Sam Crowley hanging out with my buddy Joseph McLennan III. Hey, Joseph, by the way, how can people get in touch with you? I want to give you a shout out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to makeyourfate.com, all one word, makeyourfate.com, or my name, Joseph McLennan III, or actually just josephmcclendon.com. And, you know, my website, and you can contact me through email there.
I love the third, man. Even if you're not the third, that's a great idea to have that at the end of your name.
Actually, I'm the third, and my son is the fourth.
Oh, no kidding.
I had an interesting conversation just a couple days ago, and I've been questioned about it before, but the way that this guy came at me was just hilarious. And it was actually a television interview because, you know, all that's been going on in the news and, you know, when things like that happen, I get called to do a lot of interviews. And the guy, and you know, he's kind of a little bit of a rookie, but maybe not. He was, you know, he's on a television show. And what he said to me was, he goes, so I understand, because I guess he found some stuff about it. He goes, your son is named Joseph McLennan IV. And he goes, don't you think it's a bit arrogant to name your son after you these days? I mean, in the olden days, it was okay. But nowadays, that just seems a bit arrogant. And what I thought, it was the first time it hit me like that, because, you know, he hit me like that, but it didn't upset me. It made me go, well, I never even thought of it like that, because I didn't name my son after me. I named my son after the greatest man I've ever known. That's my dad.
Yeah.
And my dad named me after his dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it didn't even hit me. And I told him, I said, no, I didn't name him after me. And, my dad's a military vet, and you know, he's just the greatest guy in the world. And it was so funny because you could see the expression on the guy's face. It was like, oh, well, I guess maybe I was reading this wrong.
Wow. Yeah, no, I had no thoughts about arrogance. I just thought it was cool that you got a last, like, Thurston Howell III on, you know, Gilligan's. I just thought that was cool, you know. Hey, what would your dad say about what's going on in the U.S. these days?
Well, actually, we have not had a conversation yet about it because I've been on the road a bit. However, my father, you know, gosh, there's lots and lots that I'm leaving out. But my father suffered a whole lot of injustice throughout his life, growing up in the 20s and the 30s, and a lot of prejudice. And so have I, by the way, through time. And and so he has been not an activist in, you know, as most people think about it, but he literally, when I was 6 years old, it's one of my earliest memories about him, 6 or 7 years old, my father had gone into a restaurant and my father was in the Air Force at the time. Mm-hmm. And he'd gone into a restaurant, and this was in the 60s. He had gone into a restaurant with a couple of his other buddies who were white, and they refused to serve him because he was black. And so my father, rather than getting upset being angry, he left and actually brought a suit upon that restaurant and won the suit. It was all, and I remember seeing the newspaper articles and all that stuff about it at the time, and it was during that time. And so that was a very brave thing to do. And so with what's going on right now, I have not had the conversation with him, but I know how he'll respond. And it is my opinion as well. It's not a black thing. It's not a white thing. It's a human thing. Yes, those are elements. It's a human thing. And I'm more focused on the solution and the reasons, the solution through the reasons why things are the way that they are on both sides, than having the conversation about whose life matters more and what's that. We have some unbelievable truths now on both sides, meaning that there's things we cannot deny anymore, and we have people that are losing their lives and giving their lives and putting their lives on the line, both on both sides, to make sure that we make a change. And if there is a great thing about it, Sam, it is that now it's out in the open. You know, it's gotten to a point where people are just not taking it anymore, and now it's out in the open, and it's like, you know, dealing with the elephant in the room. Now we have to deal with it. And I hope I'm part of that. I know I'm part of that solution versus, you know, name-calling, pointing fingers and things like that.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you, I've mentioned this. I may even said this to you in the green room. I think I might have had this conversation. I grew up in Bradford, Pennsylvania, population of 8,000 people. We had one black family, and their name were the Allens. And there was, I think, seven or eight of them, and there was seven or eight kids. There was eight kids in our family as well. My mom raised eight of us by herself. Wow. And Dave Allen shined shoes at the country club, and he was a black guy, and nice guy. I mean, you know, but it was the only black family I ever knew for 18 years. Like, I never saw a black person until I went to Penn State. And then, you know, you get out into the real world and it's like, wow, there really are a lot of cultural differences. And now when you get into what we got going on with Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, what happened in Dallas and Minnesota and Baton Rouge and everything that's happened just in the past week here in the U.S., I'll tell you, me for one, blown away by what I've learned about what black people, what African Americans feel, how they think. Like, I got no clue, man. I mean, I grew up literally in a most insulated silo of white people you'd ever known in your, like, and how funny that the black guy Dave shined shoes. I mean, can you get any more stereotypical than that?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so now that I'm 48 years old, I'm looking and saying, damn, this is some heavy stuff, man. You know? And I don't even know what the solution is, but I'll tell you what. I'm along for the ride. I got my hands. I'm willing to help out, but I don't even know what would a guy that didn't even, you know, grow up with any type of diversity, how could somebody like that even help, you know?
Well, first off, thank you for your honesty. And that is, again, we're having this conversation and, you know, you and I are getting to know each other, if you will, but we're having this conversation and it is a result, unfortunately, because of the tragedy. But two things. Number one, with regard to how you can help, you're doing it right now, just having a conversation, and you're not alone with regard, and you're not alone. It's not just white people don't understand the history and the stuff that are going on. Same with black people. I should say not the same,
yeah.
But there are many black people that don't really understand, especially millennials, because it's been hidden from us through history. And it's been also, it's just been hidden and put on the back burner for millennials. They don't know that as well. But the reality is this, that when it comes down to the solution, it is going to, A, it's going to take conversation, and B, it's going to be, you ask the question, what can you do? You know, honestly, Sam, it is just educate yourself and recognize this fact that I'm about to say now. That I say this to everybody, doesn't matter your color. Mm-hmm. If you're in the United States, one of the things that we have to realize is that, and I guess I kind of direct this often to not so much individuals, but groups of people. If you're in the United States, race is a hotbed. I mean, we're a hotbed of racial issues. We truly are. We always have been.
Yeah.
This is nothing new. You're saying it right now. You never were exposed to it. You never were around people like that. And our history was systematically hidden from us and skewed. But the reality is, alongside the people that made those changes in the civil rights time were white people. It divided our nation. People forget that half of the country was against slavery, was against, you know, all of the injustices that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
And even now, when you look at it, I'm seeing these demonstrations on television, and it amazes me that the media cherry picks certain groups. You know, show for Black Lives Matter, they'll only show black people marching. But the broader spectrum of it, which is what we now, because we've got cell phones, we've got videos, what you're seeing is it's a mixture of people. It's not just black people that are saying that. And they're not saying that only Black Lives Matter. They're just saying that, yes, check it out. You know, there are the facts out right now that our lives don't seem to, don't appear to, are being shown that don't matter as much as somebody else of a different color. That's all. That, you know, I'm not a Black Lives Matter. I'm not part of that organization. But what I do is I recognize what their real message is. And I do recognize that within that, it's not just black people. Unfortunately, we live in a world where the media is controlled by, you know this as well as I do, yeah, by a small group of people, very powerful people. So what is being disseminated is actually fanning the fires. And there's a reason why that's happening. Oh, don't get me started, you know. But the reality is we all have to realize that we're in this together, and there are more of us that are for equality than there are ones that are against it. There's only a few bad cops that are out there. You know, we saw, I just watched President Obama's speech, and it was magnificent. He spoke to the families of the slain police officers, and if you get a chance, go back and listen to it, because it was brilliant.
Absolutely. I T-voted it. Yeah, I will.
Yeah. And you know, the things that he's talking about are absolutely true. It's like we're at a precipice. We're at a place that we've got to do something about it. And as you look around, those officers were trying to do what they were paid for, keep the peace. One, you know, jerk destroyed it. Yes, there are a handful of bad people as well. And I'm not defending anybody that does anything outside of the law or does, you know, creepy things. I'm just saying that that old saying about one bad apple, you know, spoiling a bunch. No, it doesn't. The bad apple's the bad apple, you know. And so that's my two cents.
No, man, look, I love it. I love the topic. I'm not afraid to dive into these things, because I think when you become afraid to just be transparent, then, my God, that's an even bigger problem. I mean,
I agree.
Holy cow, playing your cards close to the vest. If you don't understand an issue, I don't understand the issue. And I honestly don't. I don't understand. I didn't understand until all of this started happening in our country over the past year. And I'm thinking, wow. And whether we share the same political views or not, it's not even political. It's just a human thing. You know, I find a lot of angry people on both sides of this, and very angry people. And sometimes, not all the time, but I find angry people to lack purpose in their lives. Like,
I agree.
They'll get on social media and they'll just get hell bent on their side, and they'll put every meme out there, every quote, every Fox News or MSNBC and whichever aisle you're at, and they'll go nut, and they're so angry because it's like, who has time to do that? You know?
Well, apparently a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's becoming the norm right now that you know, we've got, oh, don't get me started. We've got social network that has allowed people to anonymously say the worst things in the world. It's not even anonymous. They put their face on it because they're protected, you know, from everything. And it's the norm.
Yeah, it really is. It's so spineless. You know, and if you're, you know, you are not going to, you know, I don't think you're going to be successful at all if you're not afraid to have shots taken as far as people saying things about you online. But that's a conversation for another day. I know we got to wrap it up. Joseph, we got to do another podcast. So much more to talk about, but I know you got to run. Thank you so much for coming on here, for educating our audience, a lot of personal development, motivational, society type issues. Let's do it again sometime.
I would love to. You say when, I'm on it. And thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me on the show. And dude, I love you. You're awesome. And let's do it again anytime.
Hey, it's Joseph McClendon III. Check him out at makeyourfate.com. Joseph, have the best day, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Every Day is Saturday podcast. Still fired up and want more of Sam Crowley? Be sure to visit everydayissaturday.com. And don't forget to follow Sam on Twitter @SamCrowley. Let Sam know you're listening. Use hashtag Every Day is Saturday.